Thanks, Michelle. When she first asked me to do this, I guess the reason I got this because he was in Pennsylvania, so and I am too. And I never heard of him, so I started doing a little bit of reading, and he's really fascinating. I've lived in four of the original colonies, and so I have an interest in colonial history. So this fit in perfect. So actually, I'm glad you asked me to do it because I learned a lot. So I'm going to just try to summarize some of what he did. But John Bartram was born in Philadelphia in 1699. He died during the Revolutionary War in 1777. He was born into a Quaker family, and he inherited a farm on the west bank of the Schuylkill River. So if you've ever been in Philadelphia, you know that river runs through there. There's a road that runs along it called the Schuylkill Expressway, sometimes Schuylkill Expressway, because traffic can be pretty bad. So he was a farmer, but as he spent a lot of time outside, he made a lot of observations, and he developed an interest in just wildlife and plants in general. So he was more than interested in just plants. He also was interested in wildlife. And he started taking short trips up the Schuylkill River towards New York, and he started observing plants that he had never seen before. And eventually he traveled up into Ontario, and during his life he went as far south as Florida. So he traveled all through the colonies, and at that time Spain still controlled Florida, so he was even down in there. Later on, his son William joined him on some of these, and William was an illustrator, so he took him along and he drew a lot of pictures of plants and animals and wrote books. So and he continued, and a lot of what we know about American Indians at that time was because of them. They spent time with the Indians, and they wrote down some of the culture of Indians and what they did, how they prepared food and things like that. So they were really interested in the Indian societies. So it was a little different. So just give you an idea of what he did here during his life. He took a number of expeditions, but these are some of the big ones. Some of these he did more than once. So he came down through the Eastern Shore, down through the Delmarva Peninsula, surveyed around throughout Virginia, came up the Shenandoah Valley, went out the New River from Southern Virginia, from North Carolina through Southern Virginia into what is now West Virginia. At that time it was Virginia. If you don't know, West Virginia broke from Virginia during the Civil War. So that Virginia used to be a big... Actually, in colonial times, Virginia went all the way out to the Mississippi River and I think even up into Minnesota. So it was a huge colony. Well, at least they claimed it. I don't know if there really was, but I think they claimed... Colonies maybe didn't agree on the boundaries. He went through the Carolinas... and down into northern Florida. So, and he took a lot of shorter trips as well. And all along the way, he was observing new plants, new animals, and in some cases naming them, in some cases collecting them, and making a lot of notes about them. So this was his house. It still stands. It's been renovated. But this picture was taken in 1919, and it's on his original farm. So I'll intersperse a few pictures of things here as we go along. I think what really changed his life was his connection with Peter Collinson. And Collinson was an English cloth merchant, but he had a real strong interest in gardening, and he became the president of the Royal Society in England. So he had a large garden, and he would distribute seeds and plant material with other, I guess, wealthy landowners in Europe and in England. And he finally, it developed into a business, but he needed new plant specimens. And so through his business contacts, he learned about Bartram, and he contacted him and asked him if he could send him some seeds. So they developed a long relationship, a lot of correspondence over the years. And so in 1735, he sent the first seeds to Collinson. Eventually, he'd sent so much material over and so many dried specimens And he would send animals as well, sometimes turtles, lizards, snakes, stuffed birds, things like that. Collinson was able to convince King George III to award Bartram with a pension of £50 a year, and he gave him the title of King's Botanist to North America. Bartram thought that wasn't enough, you know, because this was supposed to pay for his traveling, and he said he really needed more. And Collinson wrote back and said, "Shut up, take what you can get, you know, and be happy with it." So, not in those words, but that was the gist of the letter. But he continued to send seeds to a lot of the royal gardens in Europe. And eventually, he's won a number of awards. He was elected as a foreign member of the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, and he received a gold medal from the Society of Edinburgh for obtaining useful plants or trees and shrubs for other countries. He also corresponded quite a bit with Carl Linnaeus, and he's the first practicing Linnaean botanist in North America. And it's quite a bit of correspondence with Linnaeus, too, and sent him a lot of samples and things, and enough that Linnaeus called him the greatest natural botanist in the world, which I think is quite a statement. But he discovered and he introduced a lot of different plants. One of the ones I think he was the first one to describe some of these plants, like Venus flytrap. There was another plant that had never been named, and he called it Franklin tree, because Benjamin Franklin was one of his friends. And there's a whole list, and that's just an abbreviated list. There was quite a big list of plants that he was the first one to describe. The other thing he did is he came up with the idea of having a scientific society in America. So since Collinson was involved in the Royal Society in England, he wrote to him and said he would like to do something similar in America. And it described why and everything. And Collinson wrote back a little while later and was not very supportive. And he said, first of all, you don't really have... It was kind of demeaning, actually. You know, you really don't have enough qualified people in America to have such a society. And the other thing is it takes money, and you don't have enough wealthy people to support it. So he thought it was a bad idea. Collinson didn't agree. And he convinced Benjamin Franklin that they might want to do something like that. And Franklin was a printer. And so he put together a brochure. It took him a few years to do this, but they finally put together the American Philosophical Society. It met in Philadelphia. So he was really the founding father of that society. And it was founded to promote useful knowledge in the sciences and the humanities. So it was... You know, they studied all kinds of science and natural history. So he sent his seeds to overseas in these what they called Bartram seed boxes. So he built these boxes like this. I think that's one of the original boxes, actually. And so in the fall every year, he would collect seeds to ship to Europe. And it became a business. And he had catalogs, so there's some copies of catalogs where he had 168 species listed that he could provide. Most of them were woody plants, or some herbaceous plants, but mostly woodies. And so I just listed some of them. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. And so sometimes he would just, if you said you want a seed, you send him an order for a seed box, and he would put seeds in there. He would kind of decide what was going to go in. It was sort of a standard mix of seeds that he would send to everybody. But if you wanted specific things, you could ask for them, and he would try to accommodate you. So you could order a seed box and get whatever he sent you, or ask for certain species, and he'd try to do that. So by the 1740s, this had become a pretty good business. So the standardized seed box that he would send had about 100 different species, and it cost 5 guineas. So, and he just load them up and send them on a ship. Sometimes it included dry specimens, depending on what you wanted. Sometimes he would send cuttings or scion material so you could graft them yourself. And he established an 8-acre garden and a greenhouse, and he had more than 2,300 species that contained mother trees that he could sample from. The city of Philadelphia has purchased this original garden and has renovated. It's really nice now. And so this is the oldest botanic garden in America. So if you want to go visit it, you can. It's only a couple hours up the road from here. So he also was connected with Benjamin Franklin. You remember Franklin spent quite a bit of time in England before the Revolution trying to convince the English that Americans were really British citizens and should have representation in their government. And when he decided he spent years over there, and he had a few supporters, but he couldn't. I like to read English, colonial history, so this is off the topic. But he wasn't successful doing that, so he came back to America, and he went to a Continental Congress and said, they're never going to accept us as citizens. We might as well split. So that's when he decided it was time to have a revolution, basically. But when he was in England, and then later when he was in France as ambassador to France during the Revolutionary War, Bartram was still sending seeds to him, but Franklin was sending seeds back to him from Europe as well. And Collinson did too. He sent him plant material from Europe as well. So he was probably one of the first ones that really imported a lot of these. But he had a nursery so when the city bought it, the city of Philadelphia, they reopened the nursery, and now they still sell native woody plants. And they have a 23-page catalog if you want to buy plants. Just some of the fruit and nut species he describes, since this is the Pomological Society, I thought I should put some of this in, but these are some of the things he described. He came across a lot of wild peach plantings, and he thought they were native to America because they were just all over the place. And of course, he was wrong. But I remember in some of the other, I read a book one time about Virginia pomology. It was written about 1820s. And some of the English colonists in Jamestown said that peaches grew really easy, and they actually, I'm not sure what was spreading the seed, but they became an invasive species in some areas, and they had to kill them. So I think that's what he was coming across with some of these plantings. The Indians may have planted some of them too. But in other cases, he knew that the Spanish had introduced oranges and things like that, so he knew some of it and not others. The other thing was when he was in St. Augustine, they had a frost. He was there in January, so he described some of the frost injury to some of the plants that were there. He had a wide range of scientific interests, though. He was interested in plant ecology, and he realized that certain species did better in certain microclimates. And in some of his letters to Collinson, they were describing, they were wondering why in England a certain plant wasn't a problem, but when he sent Bartram the seeds, it became invasive and started invading his surrounding fields. And the same with some of the seeds that Bartram sent to him. In America, they weren't a problem, but when they went to England, they spread, became weeds, and so they were trying to figure out why that was. So I think he was the first guy that really studied invasive species in America. But he's interested in various aspects of plant physiology, and especially reproduction. At that time, there was a lot of discussion with the European scientists about pollination. And so he was able to show that some species required cross-pollination, some didn't. He actually did experiments where he didn't allow certain flowers to be pollinated, and he realized that there were some species that had male and female plants or male and female flowers on the same plant, or flowers that had both male and female parts. So he was involved in some of that early work on pollination. As part of that, he was interested in floral anatomy and plant morphology. Obviously, plant taxonomy, because he was trying to identify a lot of species with the help of Linnaeus. He also observed some things about soils that he realized that crop rotation, especially with legumes, was good for the soil. If you added compost and green manure, it seemed to help. And he also realized that if you plowed too frequently, it reduced soil fertility as well. So a lot of these, I think he was the first one that really observed some of these things. So this is a picture of his apple orchard. This picture was taken in 1892, and in 1896 they counted the rings in some of these trees, and they think they were planted around 1740, and they were all removed in 1900. So they're gone now, but those are some fairly old trees. So, I just thought I'd give you a taste of some of the correspondence he had with Collinson. I didn't have time for a lot of it, but I think Benjamin Franklin gave Collinson some Newtown pippins, and he loved them. And I think Franklin actually got them from Thomas Jefferson, because that was Jefferson's favorite apple. So they were all corresponding with each other. And I think Jefferson actually sent plant material back to Bartram as well. So he asked him for some sign material for Newtown Pippin, and this is, so he sent them, and so this is quotes from him. So this, I always love the spelling, because they spell phonetically. So when you look at the correspondence, two authors didn't necessarily spell things the same way. They just, so sometimes it's hard to tell what's going on. But so he said, we were sadly disappointed, being in hopes of seeing some grafts of the Newtown Pippin. But there was none, pray remember, another year. So I guess he forgot to send them that year. So he's asking them to send them next year. For what comes from you, so he sent them some fruit, and he said it was delicious, and he's hoping that their son will ripen them to the same perfection, because their friend Benjamin Franklin had given them some that they really liked. So that was in March 1759. Then a month later, I guess he had received a shipment, and he said he disappointed sending only three or four grafts of Newtown Pippins. Be sure to send trees of each sort and more grafts, for they look fresh and well. They would have been better tied up in moss. These scent were loose, so I guess they kind of dried out. So there was a lot of this kind of stuff in their correspondence where if he wasn't happy, he let them know. So then in the fall, he said, "Is much obliged to thee for grafting the Newtown Pippins. What fruit comes from you is excellent. I wish our son may bring it to like perfection. We will give them a fair trial in different situations." So I'm not sure how they did there, but in a little while, he said, they're all alive, and they promise well. Time will discover whether their excellency is derived from your fine climate. So I guess he realized that it may not produce as well in some climates as others. I've tried to grow some of the English apples in Virginia, and it didn't work very well, so I don't know how Newtown Pippin did there. But some of the other fruits he sent included Spitzenberg apples and apricots, peaches, nectarines. They had trouble growing some of these, so they didn't get much. He said the plums did well. The gooseberries were furry, so I guess that's some kind of disease, I guess. But they also corresponded about on a lot of these other things. So there'll be more detail in the paper I write for the journal. But one of the things they talked about was peaches. They couldn't keep them alive. And it was a long letter, and I'll just summarize it, but they said you plant, so they were grafted peach trees. They start producing about the third year, and by about 6 or 7 years they die because borers. They didn't know what it was. They said it was a worm near the roots. And I read this from some of the colonial literature in Virginia, too, that's what happened with peaches. I don't think they thinned them either, so I think the branches broke down. Between the borers and limb breakage, they could only keep them alive. They fruit 3 or 4 years, so the solution was you have a nursery, and you plant pits every year. And so as they die, you just replace them. So they'd plant peaches every year. So he said he had a nursery with 2,000 peaches that were ready to go as the other ones died. So they just, people talk about organic, they grew things organically. Yeah, they did, but trees died too. Thomas Jefferson actually said that the best use of a peach tree, because he tried to grow peaches, he brought in varieties from Italy, and he said the best use was firewood, because he couldn't keep them alive. The borers killed them. So, But he liked Lady Pear, and so this is a series of pictures, one from 1898, that's on the corner of his house, and then from 1917, and then it died a little later when they had a severe drought in 1931. So that tree's no longer there. And That's the original house. Again, that's another shot. And he had a cider mill along the river, and that's what's down there in the lower thing. but I want to, I think I have to give some thanks to the curator there, Joel Fry. He sent me a lot of material, a lot of correspondence, and he was very helpful. So I was talking to Michelle that, I mean, we can learn a lot about these people. I'm sure the other speakers have seen this, too. You can read all these letters going back and forth. You learn a lot about these people. Nobody's going to know that about us. You know, we don't leave that kind of a paper trail. And it didn't hit me till when I was putting this together, and I thought, man. Or if you read the correspondence between Jefferson and Adams, I mean, they weren't really writing for each other. They were writing for us. I mean, it was obvious that they were writing for future generations so they could see their points of view. And we're not going to do that. And it's sad that future generations won't have that. But if you want to visit the gardens, you can go to their website. And they're really good. They'll give you tours. They have a lot of programs for youth where they teach them about science and about nature. So it's an active, it's a going affair there in Philadelphia. So if you're ever in Philadelphia, this might be a good place to check out and see what you can do. I don't know. Any questions? So. Okay, great. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the others. So.